All right, so continuation of the lyrical breakdown of the spoken word poem for my future wife. And so in the last episode, I touched on the lines, "Dearly beloved, we gather with reason of love." I touched on the personal background that has for me, why the intentionality and the thinking behind why I structured it that way. Why do I start with those words and that phrasing? And I also touched on just my ideas of love from childhood versus my ideas of love now, and also the background of this poem and kind of the setting and the basis of it. What's the context and the circumstance of it? And so we'll continue. I'll start off with the lyrics of the actual poem. And so starting with the ones we touched on, starting with the lyrics from the beginning we touched on last week. "Dearly beloved, we gather with reason of love. Our beloved found bloom in season because head over heels on his knees is he with fantasies of marriage, hopes that she agrees." And so starting with "our beloved found bloom in season because," touching on an idea of timing in relationships. And this that principle and that idea, I if I'm being honest and transparent, is something that I've heard a lot, particularly within Christian culture, within church culture, of timing, of like you'll find someone to spend the rest of your life with at the appropriate time, and particularly in church culture, in God's time. And it if I'm being honest, as in my early 20s, in my teenage years, it infuriated me to hear that. I didn't like hearing that because it put the idea of finding someone to spend the rest of your life with into a space that was out of my control. And so I didn't like the idea of the one and the idea of the universe and the heavens and the spirits and are working together and orchestrating an appropriate time that you can't control, in which to bring you together with someone to spend the rest of your life with. Or in church culture, God is working in a way in the details of your life and in the life of whoever it is you're going to spend the rest of your life with to bring you two together at an appropriate time that he sees fit. And ironically, as much as I believe in the intentionality of God, the purposefulness of God, the carefulness of God, the detail-oriented nature of God, the meticulous personhood of God, and how much he orchestrates the details and the seemingly haphazard things and circumstances of our lives, when it came to the idea of someone to spend the rest of my life with, I did not like the idea. I threw tantrums and fits against the idea of God has a timing for these things, and it isn't 100% entirely in our hands, that there is some level of orchestration happening in a way that we can't perceive or understand, that goes into us being brought together with someone that to spend the rest of our lives with. That's just where I fall and how I have come to accept and embrace and look at the idea of finding a spouse. And so that's where that line comes from, begrudgingly. Our beloved found. So again, it's third person Kevin speaking to an audience that's watching. So it's like if you imagine my soul and my psyche as a conference room, as a boardroom of executives and directors and producers and people who, and that room is filled with my ancestors, spiritual ancestors and ethnic ancestors, my Puerto Rican ancestors, my Korean ancestors, my Christian ancestors, people who are invested in how my life plays out because I am one of their descendants, and so they are in a caretaker position, even though only felt in a spiritual sense. They are very much so real in my mind, in the sense of whenever my soul and psyche feels like it's in a transcendent place, whether spiritually because of meditation or prayer or solitude or silence, or because I'm fantasizing and imagining in a place where my ancestors and persons who aren't in the immediate realm are still in existence and speaking about and coordinating the plannings of my life and the happenings of my life and giving input and feedback and instruction and direction and expressing concern and desire for the happenings of my life. I imagine there's an orchestrator, there's a narrator in that room, and it's almost like me at 96 speaking to that great room of persons about me right now. And so that's what that line comes from. And that's who, if, whenever I read and whenever I write in particular, I always assume a POV. And so sometimes it's first person, me pontificating, and sometimes it's third person, me as an older version of myself speaking to me or about me now. Or maybe it's a POV of me, a younger version of myself, me at 7, reminding myself of what life was like at that age. And so, yeah, that's what this particular moment is. It's like me, it's like 96, 110, 111-year-old Kevin speaking about 28-year-old Kevin to the boardroom of people that are invested in the life of Kevin. And so that person, that narrator, is saying, our beloved, our Kevin now, or actually not Kevin now, our Kevin who is in and on his wedding day has found bloom as if he were a plant or a flower. He has found bloom. He has bloomed and opened up. He has finally been granted the appropriate time and occasion to now bloom into this plant, this full form of, into becoming who he should be. And not only is he come into this moment in terms of his personhood is mature and ready and appropriate, but the season and time in which the world is moving along is in season, in spring. It's happening in an appropriate time. So he has fallen in love, but also in terms of it being God's timing as a season being a metaphor for God's timing. God's timing is on par. Kevin has come to a place where he's fallen in love, and it's in God's timing on God's conditions. And so that alignment and that cross section, that intersection of happenings, is reason to rejoice and reason to gather. And that's dearly beloved. The reason we even got to the point of a wedding is because those two things found intersection, God's timing and him being in love. And so to follow into the next lines, he's head over heels on his knees. And so that's to say, our beloved found bloom in season because head over kneels on his knees is he. How do we know that those two things happen? Because he's head over heels. Number one, we're here on the wedding day. He's head over heels. Still, he's so head over heels that even after the infatuation wore off, even after the romance stage wore off, he felt such a belief and a affirmation and a confidence and certainty in this thing that he happened across, which is someone to spend the rest of his life with, that they made it to a wedding day, as a contrast to all the other relationships of his life that fell apart and fell through. This one made it to the, this one stood the test of time and made it to the place that he never thought any relationship would make it. So how do we know our love had found bloom in season, that it was in God's timing, and that he's in, that he's not only in infatuation, but he's in love? Because head over heels on his knees is he, with fantasies of marriage, hopes that she agrees. So the idea of he's head over heels still on cloud nine, even after past the romance stage and infatuation stage, on his knees, to, on the one part, saying on his knees before God, you know, praying for the sanctity and protection of and success and of this idea of proposing to this woman, having her hand in marriage, marrying this woman, but also on his knees of like, he's practicing the proposal. And so even though I'm saying that the spoken word is a set, it's in the setting of on his wedding day, it dips in and out of moments of he has happened upon a potential spouse. He's now in the courtship stages of the potential spouse. He's now proposed to her. They're now, it's kind of like the book of the Song of Solomon. It's a book about it's a book about the stages of a relationship that go all the way from a man happening upon a woman that he loves and then courting her and dating her and going through that phase into actually the marriage ceremony and then moving on into consummating the marriage and then into conflict and conflict resolution and the hardships of dealing with the difficulties of marriage, and then back into reaffirming the to reaffirming the commitment of the marriage and strengthening the commitment and the bond to one another in light of recent crisis or in light of close crisis or difficulty. Like, we just went through difficult times, but now we're going to come back together and recenter ourselves and refocus ourselves on each other and God to remind ourselves that we made a commitment, that we do love one another, and that difficult times or times of crisis don't define and don't dictate. They're just things that we can go through, and if handled and dealt with appropriately, can be a catalyst to strengthening our relationship and our commitment to one another and our bond with one another. And so that I kind of, in the same way that the Song of Solomon deals with those several different stages of happening upon court, seeking out a wife, courting a wife, engaging with, proposing to, marrying a wife, consummating the marriage, and then dealing with the actual nitty gritty of a marriage. In the same way, I try to dip into different stages of the idea of a relationship. And so in this moment, I'm dealing with the idea of he's happened upon someone that he sees as appropriate and fit for a future spouse. And so now he's filled with joy and happy. I'm going from Our Beloved Found Bloom in season, because we're on the wedding day. Now let's back up a little bit and talk about what led us up to this moment of this wedding day, which was he happens upon this unbelievable beauty, beautiful in terms of aesthetic, in terms of physical beauty, but also in personhood, so much so that it led him to a moment of wedding day that he's never been able to even get close to before. And that's how we know, folks, that this, us being here today, is how we know that he found love and that it was in God's time, because we're here. So he's on his knees practicing the proposal. Head over heels on his knees is he, with fantasies of marriage, hopes that she agrees. So that's kind of the layout and the background and the breakdown of those lines. I'll go a little further just to kind of finish out this next part before it's a good place to stop and get into the next part in another episode. So to go all the way back from the beginning. Dearly beloved, we gather with reason of love. Our beloved found bloom in season, because head over heels on his knees is he, with fantasies of marriage, hopes that she agrees. Give ear to his speech that is compelled by seeing a fair maiden, joy laden. What joyous statement have we? He speaks, bone of my bone, flesh of flesh, she. And so into that next part, going from our beloved found bloom in season, because he's in love and it's in God's time and God's plan, because he's head over heels so much so that we got to the wedding day, is he, with fantasies of marriage, hopes that she agrees. He's practicing his proposal and also on his knees in prayer before God, going, God, please make this work and make this successful. And so now the narrator asks the audience to now pay close attention as we're about to hear our beloved, or as we're about to hear the groom speak on his wedding day, and go into, again, a pontification about this woman he loves and the different stages of their relationships, whether it's past, present, future, as he either foreshadows what he expects out of the marriage, or as he's speaking about his current state of being in love, where he talks about the things that led up to this moment. And so it's saying, give ear to his speech as if he's about to make vows. Everyone, listen up. We're about to hear from him and the actual juxt and gist of what we came of one of the main parts of why we're here today, to hear this, to experience and witness this verbalizing of what is to then be acted out in a life of marriage, a verbalizing of vows, of a law, of a commitment, of truth, of beauty, of a decision to walk in a life that we aspire to. And so that's kind of what vows are, right? Like you sit there in awe at the idea of vows and hearing vows, because the reason that they're so inspiring is because they're supposed to be indicative of a life that inspires a life that's to be aspired to, which is a life of disciplined commitment, a life of dedicated romance, a life of continued faithfulness to and resolve to an ideal of love and commitment and togetherness and bond and growing and moving forward together. And so that's where we're going now. Give ear to his speech that is compelled by seeing. What compels his speech? What compels these vows? What compels this soliloquy we're about to go into? The scene of this woman and seeing her and her joy produces, what joyous statements have we? Give ear to his speech that is compelled by seeing a fair maiden joy laden. What joyous statement have we? He speaks. And so again, the narrator is setting us up to go from the poem is in his words and from his POV to now we're going to transfer over to the groom's words at first person POV. He speaks, bone of my bone, flesh of flesh, she. And of course, that's an allusion to Genesis when God makes Eve from Adam's ribs. In the first moment Adam sees Eve, which is the first moment that I've been told and that I understand from classes that I took on Bible, is the first moment we have a poem or a song in the Bible. Adam begins to sing. And so he the first moment Adam ever lays eyes on a woman, on his wife, to be wife, what elicits forth from his person is song. A creation of art, creation of lyric and prose and singing and poetry. When Adam says, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, I'll call her a woman for she was taken out of man. That's a song and a poem. And so to use that structure and that wording as if to say, in the same way that the father of all existence responded to his wife, it's only appropriate it's fitting and it's appropriate because that's how I feel about this woman that you are now here to hear me talk about spending the rest of my life with. The reason we were able to make it here today is because she feels like so much a part of my soul in person that to do life without her feels wrong. And so bone of my bone, she feels like my bones, flesh of my flesh, she feels like me. To lose her would feel like losing myself, would feel like losing flesh, would feel like losing, but it would feel like a part of me. If you were to take a limb, if you were to maim me, if you were to take heart and soul from me, mind from me, it would feel like I lost a part of myself. If you were to take her, if I were to lose her. And so it feels like I found a part of myself, as if I had to live my entire life without a limb or without a heart or without a mind or without a soul. It feels as though I have had returned to me a part of me that has been missing my entire life, and now a piece of me feels filled and whole and makes sense, and now the lens through which I view life is a little more clear and vivid because of her. And so that's the starting out of first person Kevin Groom on his wedding day. Those are the first lines. And so just to cap off this rendition and breakdown, lyrical breakdown of that piece of the poem, we'll go back from the beginning and go to the part we've not made it to. Dearly beloved, we gather with reason of love. Our beloved found bloom in season because head over heels on his knees is he with fantasies of marriage, hopes that she agrees. Give ear to his speech that is compelled by scene of fair maiden joy laden. What joyous statement have we? He speaks, bone of my bone, flesh of flesh, she. And so we'll leave it there until next episode.